When you hear about solar panels set out in the country to generate electricity from the sun, you often hear the reference to solar farm, which is just a turn of a phrase in most cases. Most solar farms' only crop is electricity, but it doesn't have to be. Research, and it's not new, continues to consider whether solar panels and crops, or at least some plants growing deliberately, can share land. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory, a federal agency, put some money into the research of plants and panels sharing land. Jordan Macnick is the Energy Water Land Lead Analyst with the NREL and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Jordan.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Very good to have you. So I guess the idea of crops and solar panels in the same place is not that new, is it?
Well, the idea has been around for a while. I'd say for about the past decade or so, people have been exploring the potential for this to be a possibility. And I think there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence, and there's been a lot of interesting trials, both not only in the United States, but also in Italy and in France and in the United Kingdom. But what we're doing is really trying to provide a dose of systematic research and robust data collection to see if this really is a possibility and what the economics might be.
Was it something of an accidental discovery, Jordan? I mean, I wonder if somebody just noticed the plants were still growing under the panels and thought, well, heck, instead of putting, you know, weed killer out here or doing the weed whacker, we could do something with this.
I think you're exactly right. You know, I think this sort of simultaneously happened in a few different locations, including, you know, in Colorado at the National Renewable Energy Labs campus. You know, we started looking at this all the way back in 2010, so that's 8 years ago now. And the idea was, you know, things can still grow underneath panels. And rather than spraying weeds or rather than trying to suppress growth, you know, the idea was, why don't we try to do something productive with this? You know, maybe we can have this dual use and this dual outcome. And so I think things were happening simultaneously as solar development continued to expand and grow. Many different people all over the world had this similar idea that, you know, maybe it would be possible to do two things at once.
So I know that the campus there does fund research, but is there something that goes on the campus itself too?
Yes. So at our facility in Colorado, we have a number of different solar projects that are installed and running, and some of those produce electricity to sell to the grid. Others are there for research purposes. And what we've done is, on one of those facilities, all the way back in 2010, that was designed to produce electricity, we thought it would be a great opportunity to actually conduct some additional research on this, on things like native vegetation and habitat and soil characteristics.
So it's not necessarily crops per se, but some vegetation anyway.
Right, and I think it's important to clarify that, you know, we can talk about the co-location of agriculture and solar, or the benefits of agriculture and solar together, in a few different ways. One of those is to directly grow crops, whether it's pumpkins or tomatoes or peppers, underneath the solar panels themselves. The other approach is to grow pollinator habitat and other native vegetation, which could then indirectly benefit local agriculture by supporting higher populations of pollinators that can then, and other beneficial insects that can help improve crop yields within about a one-mile radius.
All right, so two ways to go here. You can either grow crops or grow something that might help the crops, and I imagine there's a little less maintenance and upkeep with option two there.
Correct. Yeah, the exciting thing for us about option two with growing the native vegetation and the pollinator habitat is that we're actually seeing its lower O&M costs, so operations and maintenance costs. So we have less frequent mowing, less need for weed control when we do the native vegetation and pollinator habitat than if we had something like your standard turf grass or something like gravel underneath the solar panels. So in both those options, the turf grass and gravel are pretty common among solar projects located throughout the country. And it's exciting to really find out that those two approaches require a lot of weed maintenance as well as mowing, which are both expensive, and the mowing can be dangerous to the panels by kicking up rocks or anything or things like that. And so with the native vegetation and pollinator habitat, we're actually seeing a lot less need to be on the site and a lot less need for mowing and weed control.
I find myself realizing for the first time that I'd never thought much about what goes under solar panels, just the fact that solar panels are there. But there is a certain amount of science, or at least standard operating procedure, to what you put the solar panels over.
Correct. And the other exciting piece about this research is that what we're finding is that if you have gravel underneath the solar panels or even low-height turf grass, what you're going to see is that it creates almost a warmer microclimate temperature than if you have things like native vegetation or pollinator habitat or agricultural crops. And the way in which the physics of solar panels work is that if you have cooler conditions underneath the panels, those panels will actually be more efficient and produce more electricity. So having this native vegetation and agricultural crops underneath the panels will actually lead to higher solar output and higher efficiencies.
Wow. Okay, that was one of the questions I had down the road, was whether this makes any difference in the performance of the panels, and you're saying it does potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan McNick is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an energy, water, land analyst with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory based in Colorado. We're talking about co-use of farmland for perhaps crops and solar panels, or at least native vegetation and solar panels. Dual-use farming, it's called. You can join the conversation, and we do have phone lines working, 800-838-3760. And you can also get in by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Outside of the campus of NREL, though, I mean, is there a fair amount of research going on in other places as well that you're funding?
Yeah, we have a wide variety of projects ongoing. Right now we're evaluating the benefits and the potential for the co-location of solar and agriculture. In these locations, we have three different sites we're working on in Oregon, as well as sites in California, Arizona, the site in Colorado I mentioned, three sites in Minnesota, sites in North Carolina, Massachusetts, as well as New York. So those are our ongoing sites, and we only expect that list to grow going forward.
All right. So what kinds of things are being discovered in terms of tweaking of panels, you know, positions, spacing, height, that sort of thing? It seems like there are a fair amount of options there.
So, yeah, the count and the combination of configurations is almost seemingly endless in terms of how high you have the panels, how much spacing in between the panels, how much spacing between the panel rows, the types of crops you're growing. And in each of those variables will really have an impact depending on which location you're at. So with our different sites, we are looking at different variations. And so, at our test site in Massachusetts, at the University of Massachusetts Amherst campus, for example, we have elevated panels. We have panels that are about 8 feet tall, but we're varying the spacing in between the panels anywhere from 2 feet all the way up to 5 feet to see how that impacts the growth of different types of crops. And we're growing things like tomatoes and peppers and kale and broccoli and Swiss chard and a variety of other different types of crops to really see how that difference in spacing affects crop growth. And so, again, what we're trying to do is provide a little bit of quantitative and systematic and a systematic approach to really provide robust data that could then lead to other people adopting this and really knowing what the ideal conditions and the ideal approaches might be if they would like to grow crops underneath the solar panels.
So you mentioned 8 feet off the ground. Is that so you could potentially get machinery under there to work the crops?
Correct, yeah. So you can, at that 8 feet height, you can have a relatively small tractor or piece of machinery underneath there. You can have people walking underneath the panels without having to fear for them
walking
getting injured.
So
we have elevated panels there. We have another test site at the University of Arizona at their Biosphere 2 facility where we also have elevated panels. But at one of our sites in Oregon, we will be growing crops in between rows of a solar site that does not have elevated panels. And so there's a wide variety of configurations, and some of this is dependent upon what is the preference of the landowner, what is the preference of the solar developer, as well as what types of crops people are hoping to grow.
You mentioned three sites in Oregon, Jordan. Are they all in the same general area? I'm just curious because Oregon has so many different types of ecosystems and precipitation amounts.
Correct. Yeah, and we actually tried to find different sites located in different regions of the state to best capture how agriculture and how vegetation might differ throughout Oregon. Oregon is a very large state, as we've come to realize as we travel from site to site. But we have one site that's right near Medford, another site that's right near Klamath Falls, and then another site that's in the Willamette Valley.
Okay, so not far eastern Oregon, but you got something approaching high desert anyway. We're talking to Jordan Macnick at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory about the idea of dual-use farming, where crops and or at least some kind of vegetation can coexist with solar panels, and you can join the conversation on the exchange. Phones are working, 800-838-3760, and email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Kent in Rogue River. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have an idea for you. In hot, low humidity environments like the Rogue Valley or Arizona, there are plants that really don't appreciate afternoon sun. They like a little shade. So in the spirit of permaculture, it might be nice to figure a way to put afternoon shade on your crops while generating solar power.
Which I think is the essence of what we're talking about here. Thanks for that, Kent. Appreciate it. So it seems like there are some applications I noticed already, Jordan, that are using that kind of approach.
Yeah, Kent is right on the money here. And with our test site in the state of Arizona, what we are doing actually is quantifying the benefits of that afternoon shade on the growth of primarily tomatoes and peppers that we're growing in Arizona. We're growing other crops there, but with tomatoes and peppers, what we are doing is looking at the benefits of having this afternoon shade from the solar panels on growth. What we're seeing for both tomatoes and peppers is a reduction in water requirements, as well as an increase in photosynthesis and fruit production from these crops, which for us is incredibly exciting, and it's really something that I think validates a lot of this work, is that in Arizona as well as in Colorado, and you could say in parts of Oregon and in other states as well, having a little bit of afternoon shade will have direct benefits for water use efficiency as well as crop yields. And what we're doing is actually quantifying those and demonstrating that this is not just anecdotal, but we have hard data to support it.
Are they fairly significant savings in water, for example?
Yeah, we're seeing a reduction in approximately about 20% of the water requirements for the crops.
Wow.
During those times.
In a place like Arizona, that can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Jordan Macnick, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. We're talking about dual-use farming, crops and solar panels, or at least some kinds of plants and solar panels together. Here's a call from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. I would like to give the man some researched information. The wineries of Sonoma were planting their vines in either east-west orientation or north-south orientation. I apologize for not being able to remember this, but they found it significant enough that they tore out entire vineyards in order to plant them in the proper orientation for better growth. So you have that piece of information, use it in your research, and secondly, just go out and start planting underneath these things instead of researching it for 7 years, okay?
Right. Thanks, Grumpy John. Appreciate that. So some of the research did in fact start with planting, didn't it, Jordan?
Yeah, and we have been planting for a while, and I think one of the things that we are pride ourselves on is that we do have some long-term case studies. So the Massachusetts example is one. Arizona's coming up on about 3 years of planting as well, where we can demonstrate that this is not just some fluke thing that works 1 year, but it's something that can survive many years and can provide great yields for many years at a time. So our hope is that we encourage and inspire additional people to be planting and to join our research team, because we're already planting, we're already doing this, and I appreciate also the comment about the vineyards and what they're doing in Sonoma. We have had some interest from wine growers, not only in New York but also in California, who are interested in this idea as well. We haven't yet implemented anything on any wineries yet, but I think that remains a potential area that could be really successful with this co-location of solar and agriculture.
Well, that's a really interesting point he brings up, too, because I'm thinking about you have to have a certain orientation for the panels, too. You want the panels generally to point to the south, don't you?
That's correct. There are different opportunities, though, depending on if you have fixed tilt, fixed panels, or if you have panels that that might track the sun during the day. And we can talk about the different economic trade-offs of different orientations. But I think when we talk about co-locating solar and agriculture, part of that conversation is how much do we want to change or compromise some of the initial design such that it would facilitate the success of both, both the energy crop as well as the agricultural crop.
Have there been some experiments that have gone a little awry in the sense that trying to work tractors under the panels, you ended up with tractors banging into the panel supports, things like that?
So none of the projects that we're working on have had that, and I frankly don't know of any projects in Europe where that's happened either. So that certainly is going to be a risk going forward as this becomes more popular. But like I said, I haven't heard of any major issues. Something that we do hear a lot about, though, is when people are mowing the grass or mowing the weeds in between the panels for sites that, your more traditional non-agriculture co-location sites, that's when you have the mowers that are running into the solar panels or damaging some of the infrastructure or kicking up a rock that damages one of the panels.
And so if people want to learn more, maybe even take part in experiments and get funding from the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, how do they go about that?
So contacting me is a great first step. We also have a website that will be released later this week. It should be released on it that you can access from the National Renewable Energy Labs website. And so I think if you go to the National Renewable Energy Labs website, www.nrel.gov, you should be able to navigate from there and find this website. But the project is called Inspire, and we again, the website will be fully live later this week.